Ah, you know that sound. With warm weather arriving, some of us just crave a cold, carbonated drink. And that doesn't necessarily mean buying from corporate giants. Some Kansas City people are starting to make, bottle, and sell their own sodas. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today's food show on KCUR's Central Standard is all about things served ice cold or chilled. We'll get the food from our critics, but let's start with a refreshing beverage. Our journey begins at a new soda bottling plant just off the square in Independence.
As you pass inside the Polly's Pop factory under a bright orange sign, displays of soda pop memorabilia greet you, like crates of bottles and framed posters. The main space that's visible from the street through a glass wall is dominated by an old bottling line with its conveyor belts and lumbering cast iron machines. Michael Hahn shows me how it works.
I can run this through for you. Come through one bottle at a time.
This machine is called a syrupper filler crowner and part of the Polly's Pop bottling line. Like most of the line, it's antique and dates to the 1940s.
Come down, you drop the syrup.
Here, the bottles move on a conveyor belt in single file past three separate stations. One machine squirts in the flavor, the next fills the bottles with carbonated water, and the last one puts on a metal screw cap.
It's a beast, isn't it?
With his white beard and cap, Michael looks more like a beer brewer than a soda maker, but he spent years restoring these old machines, bought from Fitz's Bottling Company in St. Louis. Then, in August, the first 12-ounce bottles of Polly's Pop soda came off this line. Well, not exactly the first.
I grew up down the street from the original owner.
Michael is referring to the owner of the original Polly's Pop that was made in Independence from the 1920s until 1967.
I have no memories of drinking Polly's Pop, but my mom says we did. So now I'm making it. I think that's pretty cool.
Michael's bosses, the new owners who revived Polly's Pop, think that's pretty cool too.
You know how when someone has such a passion for nostalgic memory, I mean, ever since we moved here, he's talked about Polly's Pop, and so I knew that he was going to bring it back at some point.
That's Cindy McLean talking about husband Ken. For the last 20 years, the couple have probably done more than anyone to revive downtown Independence, redeveloping historic buildings and running small enterprises. They now own 17 businesses around the old square, including restaurants, a specialty grocer, an art gallery and a yoga studio. The McLean's latest venture is Polly's Pop. Ken McLean looks slightly disheveled in a blue suit. He's also a local attorney. He's a bundle of energy, like the fizz in the pop. He's on the other side of the room chatting with a friend. Cindy is like a cap that controls Ken's fizz. She suggests he stop his conversation so we can start the interview.
Okay, Mr. McLean. Focus.
I suggest to Ken that he's turning Independence into a hub for craft soda. He smiles broadly.
We are offering it at all our locations, and we're selling it. I think we've sold something around 25,000 bottles thus far. I don't know whether it'll be a trend, but I do think there is a market for it, and I think that people will always drink soda pop.
And yet last year, the big soda companies reported that sales were at a 30-year low. But craft soda makers are popping up. A few months ago, Atomic Fizz, run by students from Independence, did their first bottling at the Polly's Pop facility. With American flags on their bottle caps, the students say their soda is proof that the American dream isn't dead. In a different way to Polly's Pop, Atomic Fizz is using soda pop's power to conjure a comforting and positive image of the past.
In my grandparents' garage, there was always a wooden case of Polly's Pop with all the various flavors that they offered.
In 1960s Independence, Ken says Polly's Pop was an integral part of the town's personality. His favorite flavor was grape. Today, Polly's Pop offers grape, strawberry, orange, pineapple, cream, root beer, and soon to come, a diet root beer that Ken tastes and then describes like a wine expert.
It has a very good start, but it doesn't leave enough taste on your tongue afterwards, and so you don't have a really good mouthfeel for the soda pop, and so it kind of disappears almost. It needs some vanilla or some type of buttery taste in it to help with that more full bodied flavor that I look for.
Like any big corporate sodas, Polly's Pop flavors come from a mixture of natural and artificial ingredients made by food companies. Unlike big name sodas sold in the US, though, Polly's Pop is sweetened with cane sugar, and Ken only sells 12 ounce bottles. Back on the bottling line.
This is really the money piece right here.
We're now at the mixer, another antique with five stocky arms that each latch onto a bottle and swing it up and down to mix the syrup and carbonated water together.
And as the table rotates, that bottle gets turned about 4.5, 5 times.
Gosh.
And I'll show that to you. It's pretty loud, too.
It reminds me of the Disney cartoon, The Sorcerer's Apprentice, when those mops are frantically carrying buckets of water. Interestingly, that cartoon also dates to the 1940s. This bottling line might look like a working museum piece, but Michael says it can finish 500 bottles of soda in 20 minutes. So pretty soon it's time for
a swig of soda. Danny Wood, who brought us that report, tells us that Polly's Pop was refreshing, full of complex flavor, and surprisingly unsweet. If you want a cool carbonated drink but you're addicted to coffee, there's another new trend, nitro coffee, served from a tap like beer. One of the places you can get it is Pirate's Bone, a cozy little coffee shop east of Brookside. Zaid Consuegra, who owns the place, has been working alone behind the counter on 100% of my visits. But this morning, he stepped away to introduce us to Nitro Coffee. Hey, Zaid.
Hi, good morning.
What is Nitro Coffee?
So Nitro Coffee is going to be nitrogenated coffee. We cold brew it for about, you know, anywhere from 12 to 24 hours, depending on the coffee origin. And then we filter it, we put it in a keg, and we tap it with nitrogen.
So back up for just a second, because cold brew is a trend in and of itself. And I think a lot of people have had cold brew coffee. But what's the difference between cold brew and, say, iced coffee?
So iced coffee, one, I think it's been famous by being a cup of ice filled with drip coffee, which is probably the worst thing you could have.
Diluted.
So, yeah, it's diluted coffee. So the best thing to go for is cold brewed coffee or toddy. So it'd be ground coffee filtered or brewed in cold water for long periods of time.
So it just, the heat is replaced by time, essentially.
Yes. And you get a lot less acidity from there.
So then you take this cold brew coffee and you add nitrogen to make it bubbly, and you serve it from a keg like beer. What is it like?
So the biggest comparison would be a Guinness. So think about drinking a Guinness, how
I'm thinking
the
about
body
it.
Is, yeah, and frothy. It has that crema on top. So that's going to be nitro coffee. So it's going to be a coffee drink that's very smooth. It's super flavorful, a lot less acidic. And then you have this crema, natural crema, and it makes it feel like it has cream already. So it's a very smooth, cold brewed coffee.
Do people typically drink it in the morning like their other coffee, or is it more of an afternoon drink?
It does change. So right now, now that we're in the spring and we're going into the summer, people drink it all the time. So I'm probably brewing every other day and kegging, you know, every third day.
It's so funny to think about a keg of coffee.
It is. It's more of a pain to clean it.
It's not just a coffee pot to clean out.
It's not. I wish. But we can play a lot with it now. So on tap, I have a Bolivia, an organic Bolivia, and then I have an infused grapefruit coffee
on
nitro.
Infused grapefruit. Tell me more about that one.
So I mix a lot of the drinks. And on this one, I started to talk with a company that does essential oils. So we infuse it with a grapefruit essential oil. And it's really smooth. It's very fruity and citrusy. So it's perfect for this weather.
How did you find out about this? I mean, is it a trend is it something that's been around for a long time and is just being more widely discovered? Or is it still kind of a new thing?
No, so it has been around for a long time now. And it's just, you know, we're in the Midwest, so things take a little bit longer to get here. And I really want to stress it and use all of that to my knowledge. So beyond having those cold brewed coffees and the infused one with grapefruit, I also have a black tea and berry rooibos on tap. So there's so
also,
many things.
So like nitro tea.
Nitro tea. Yeah. So there's so many things that I'm playing with just with the nitrogen.
So, okay. When you describe the nitro coffee, that sounds very sort of full bodied and rich. I mean, when you compare it to a Guinness, that's part
yes.
of what I think about. When I think about what I enjoy about tea consumed hot or iced, it is a kind of mellowness of
yes.
flavor. And I'm curious about how that transforms on tap.
So the black tea and the berry rooibos, it's a pretty mellow. It is a very mellow flavor. But it's also super rich and sweet on its own.
Do you think of it kind of like, if we're doing beer comparisons, like a Radler or something?
I wish I could compare beers. I am a cider drinker, actually. I don't do beer too much, which is really funny because when it comes down to coffee, I don't drink coffee with sugar or milk. I drink it black, but if it comes down with liquor, I always drink something sweet.
Well, so now that we're getting into what you like, I want to understand how this all fits into what you're doing more generally with Pirate's Bone, because in some ways, it's not your typical coffee shop. Let's start with the menu looking like a periodic table.
Yeah, so that was a funny story. When I opened Pirate's Bone, I started to draw on the chalkboard coffee cups because I wanted to explain the differences between the types of coffees. And as I started to draw them, I think I got to maybe number 5 or like option or 5th option. And I just got tired of actually drawing each cup. So I just grabbed a square and traced around it. And that's kind of how it became. I saw it in my head as I started to draw more options on there, that it would just become the periodic table.
Do you think it's a fair observation to say that you aren't as focused on getting the customer in and out the door as fast as humanly possible as other coffee shops? I mean, and this in a world where coffee drinkers are often just overly busy, overly tired people desperate for caffeine.
No, I think I wish I had enough people to like come in and kick out at the same time. But I do take pride in what I do. I want people to sit and enjoy, relax, really taste what goes into these drinks. Never mind the effort that it takes. There's a lot of flavors there that you won't get anywhere else. There's a lot of time that I put into the drinks. There's a lot of mixing. So anytime I come up with a new drink, I take maybe a week or two before actually bringing it out to the public. So I do a lot of test runs, and I make sure it's something that I would drink. So it's perfect for everybody. I think people should take their time while drinking.
Tell me about your background. Just to help me understand your approach and your philosophy here.
Yeah. So I grew up in Mexico City, where I was born in Mexico City. And then we moved to the States. We actually moved to Kansas when I was 11. Grew up in Kansas for most of my life. And then I went to the East Coast and I did my college in Boston. And I've been back for 6 years now. Yeah, this year. I've been back for 6 years. The love of drinks and food really came because of my background. My mom had a restaurant when I was growing up.
Here in Kansas City?
Here in Kansas City. Overland Park, to be really, because it's not Kansas City. So she had a restaurant in Overland Park, and that's kind of where my curiosity started. And then I worked at another dessertery in Boston, and that was a very high-end place. So that's where mixing and pairings came to my mind.
How did coffee come into the equation? When did you get interested in coffee?
So I was working as a cook at that time, and I wanted to get some really good coffee in the restaurant. But when I started asking people about it, there's a lot of secrecy within the coffee world.
What do you mean?
I don't know how to explain it right. It just seemed like people were hiding something from me when I went to ask about coffee, because I didn't know anything about coffee 2 years ago. You would have asked me, I would have only, you know, referred to you to Folgers, Quick Trip. I didn't know anything about, you know, all the coffee shops in town. Nothing.
Do you think it was secrecy, or there's something I can kind of imagine, which is that I mean, throughout the food world right now, but maybe particularly with drinks like coffee, wine, beer, there's a lot of jargon, like insidery jargon that sounds, so when people are trying to explain something to you, it sometimes sounds almost like they're also trying to not explain it to you.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that happened. And then two of the roasters that I met to really learn more about coffee told me some secrets, as they would call it. They told me, hey, these are some secrets. But I'm only telling you this because I know you won't do it. I know you can't do it.
Whoa.
And there was a very like straightforward statement that two people that are really big in the industry said to me. And I was just like, whoa, I wasn't even trying to do coffee. I just wanted to get some good coffee for the restaurant. But that kind of gave me a challenge.
Just the assumption that you wouldn't or couldn't do this
yourself?
The
assumption, yeah, that I couldn't or wouldn't do it. I've been, for the most part, been faced with that throughout my life. I was small. You know, I was very much an alternative kid. I went to alternative school. So throughout my years of studies, people told me that I couldn't do this or I couldn't do that. So it's always been a challenge that I accept.
So you've been at it for 3 years now at Pirate's Bone, and I'm interested in the other cold drinks you have besides the nitro stuff we were talking about.
So yeah, I like to focus on mixing drinks and pretty much having or translating what is the drink world into the chef's world, playing with ingredients, infusing things. So right now I'm playing with a lot of culture. So one of them is going to be the dirty horchata. So horchata is a rice milk based drink. And how it makes it dirty is we add a shot of espresso. So it's rice milk, vanilla syrup that we make in house, a little bit of cinnamon, and a shot of espresso on top. And that's been a very popular one this year. I just came up with the dirty pina colada. So it's coconut milk with a little bit of sugar and then some chopped pineapples and a shot of espresso on top.
Saeed Consuegra is in his third year of running Pirate's Bone, a tiny coffee shop and eatery just west of Troost on 59th Street. Thank you so much, Saeed.
Thank you.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, the food critics will help us find some cold menu items for hot days and nights. We know there are some great chilled soups out there. What else? 816-235-2888. We're back. Food critics, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is Central Standard, and I'm here with Charles Ferruzza, Jenny Vergara, and Mary Block. They're going to help us find the best chilled foods in town as the temperature begins to rise. You can call 816-235-2888 to tell us about a refreshingly cool menu item on a Kansas City menu. And don't put it off, because later on we're switching gears to get the latest restaurant news. So, critics, what kinds of things are generally chilled on Kansas City menus and on restaurant menus?
Seafood.
I think we all agreed that seafood, seafood, salads, some soups,
yep.
Some chilled soups.
Well, let's start with seafood. Mary, you're fond of a salad with chilled shrimp on it. And I feel like the difference between hot shrimp and cold shrimp is huge.
Well, I have to say that shrimp is blackened and it's not chilled, but you can get the salad without. I was simply saying, if you want to make it even better, add the blackened shrimp. But it's at West Bottom's Kitchen, and it's the kitchen green salad. And you think, really? A house salad? How great can that be? But it's with a Creole onion vinaigrette, blue cheese, these fabulous spice praline pecans, and pickled cranberries. And Gina, I always get the blackened shrimp, which just adds to it. But you don't need it. And it's a really big, wonderful, beautiful salad.
You've got some other chilled cold fish selections on your list too. Tell us about what you've chosen.
Well, ceviche is always a big thing year round, but especially at this time of year if you don't want something hot. Story always has their classic ceviche with fluke and tomatillo and apple and lime, and it's beautiful. It comes in it's just a perfect round, and it's as refreshing as can be.
Where do we get this?
At Story in Prairie Village.
And remind us how ceviche works.
It, basically, you have raw fish and you cook it, and I'm doing cook in air quotes, with lime juice. And then you can add other things to it.
So, Jenny, tell us about some of your cold fish favorites.
So I have a, I also have a shrimp dish. It's at the Oliver in the plaza, and it is their shrimp Louie, which is such an old throwback. It's an old, old salad out of California. I mean, originated in California. And it's the best mashup between a wedge salad and a nice, refreshing shrimp cocktail. So it's basically, it's got jumbo Gulf shrimp, avocado, tomato, and it's on an iceberg boat. So imagine like a wedge, and it's kind of just like dressed over the top of it. And then it has what's called Louie dressing, which is basically a takeoff of Thousand Island dressing. It's just cool, refreshing, and it's really an old school recipe. So I think that's why I kind of have like this soft spot for it. But
and this is at the Oliver?
Mm-hmm, the Oliver.
I thought that dressing tasted more like remoulade to me, but... Well,
it's supposed to have ketchup, which would be the difference. So, you know, kind of ketchup, pickle, mayo.
Okay.
So, and it's on iceberg lettuce, which I feel like is also making a comeback.
Well, in a retro kind of way. I mean, you have to use it kind of tongue in cheek. I think we all know dark greens are plentiful, and there's so many varieties now that we can be eating. The iceberg seems kind of boring, but
and better and. Certainly better for you to have all those greens for instead sure. of just iceberg, more nutrients in the greens.
But a wedge eats really yeah. heartily. I mean, a wedge of iceberg is...
And you go to a steakhouse and have it, and you use your steak knife to cut it.
And I love them there, too.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. we're talking about cold foods, and that is sort of one of the joys of iceberg is that you bite into it, and it is refreshing.
Cold. Right.
So, Jenny, you have some other... fish items on your list. We've got some sushi, some oysters.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, well, we'll start with oysters. So Jarocho in KCK, and they now have a second location open out south, has $1 oysters. And Carlos Falcon, the chef and owner of the place, has an excellent reputation for his ability to get in fresh seafood. And so I believe it's on Thursday nights in KCK and Monday nights out south. They do $1 oysters. You know, every oyster is a dollar, and you can just go in there and make a meal out of it. And they're so fresh and delicious. There's nothing better sitting on ice than chilled oysters.
And Charles, you've got plenty of fish on your cold and chilled food list. So I want to hear what you're recommending.
Well, you know, for a long time, I didn't order shrimp cocktail. I don't know why. It became such a sort of a throwback. You know, my parents loved shrimp cocktail. Mm-hmm. And they do tend to be kind of expensive,
right?
Especially the good ones, with the big shrimp. I'm a big fan of the shrimp cocktail at the Capitol Grill, which mm-hmm. is expensive. And
what stands out about it? As a shrimp.
Well, when they say jumbo
skeptic.
Shrimp, I'm telling you, these shrimp are about the size of a 747. They're gigantic. And they make their own cocktail sauce, which is spicy, not too heavy on the horseradish. And there's just something really sort of old school and elegant about a shrimp cocktail.
Do they hang off the side of a glass?
Yes.
All right. If they don't hang off the side of a glass, then forget it.
And they have good cocktail sauce, too. That's the other thing that makes or breaks
it's spicy,
shrimp cocktail.
Yeah.
What makes a good cocktail sauce?
Well, I don't want something that's just chili sauce or ketchup. I like horseradish and lime and a little
but
kick to it.
But it really shouldn't dominate the flavor of the shrimp cocktail because
that's true.
You know, it's not the shrimp are not just a vehicle for the cocktail sauce.
But Mary, where do you find the kind of shrimp cocktail you were just describing?
Well, at Capitol Grill, that would
so
be a
So you agree?
One. I do.
And Charles, you're also telling us about a crab cocktail, which... I don't think I've ever had crab cocktail.
I think this was the first time I had a crab cocktail. Big chunks of a lump blue crab. And
where do we get this?
At Jack's Fish House and Oyster Bar. And, you know, it's a great way to start a meal. Not too heavy. Beautifully presented. You know, really lovely. And big enough to share, mm-hmm. you know, if you're not too greedy like I tend to be. But, yeah, it's a good cocktail.
And you're also recommending the Maine lobster roll there?
I talk about that a lot on this show, and I apologize. But it is my favorite lobster roll to be found in Kansas City. And You know, it's done very, very simply, just a little bit of celery mayonnaise and the lobster. But what they add is a little bit of hickory smoked burgers bacon. And it adds a really, really nice smoky note to the lobster roll and a little bit of crunch, too.
So I swear we are going to move on from fish, but this is a popular choice when it comes to chilled foods, especially on the appetizer part of the menu. But what about sort of like fish displays? You know, like those combo type things. Mary, you're talking about a spicy fish bowl at Bob Wasabi?
Yes. That is my favorite dish on the menu, and it's a full meal. I don't really like to share it because I like it so much. But it's basically sashimi with rice and vegetables and cucumbers. So you get the crunch as well as the smoothness of the fish. And then they have this spicy chili sauce. And they give you some spoons and you just mix it all up. And you can eat it with chopsticks or a fork.
So it's kind of like a deconstructed sushi?
It absolutely is a deconstructed sushi. Although it does have these other vegetables, including some lettuce.
Well, let's move on to chilled soups. I think gazpacho is a popular favorite, and it's, you know, you can have a tomato-based gazpacho or cucumber. Cucumber is an ingredient where it's actually, like, metaphorically synonymous with being cold. Cool is a cucumber. So, Jenny, start us off. Take us to some good gazpacho.
Well, I would tell you that Chef Ryan Brazil at Novel every season always does some sort of cool soup or chilled soup on his menu. And right now on his tasting menu that's available weekdays, Tuesday through Thursday, I believe, it's 6 courses for $55. And the soup he has on that tasting menu this week is a cucumber gazpacho. And it's very smooth, pureed with almond, a little bit of grape, some saffron. I mean, it's kind of sweet, but very cooling.
Is it green?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And the almonds are interesting. You know, it's kind of how you can make almond milk really creamy. There's something about adding a nut into it that really, you know, kind of blends it out beautifully. So.
And this is at Novel?
Yes, on the tasting menu at Novel.
What do you guys think about this whole chilled soup popularity at the moment in general?
Not everything really lends itself to a chilled soup. I mean, I have found that chilled, and it's become very popular, a chilled cantaloupe soup or a sweet melon soup is really too sweet to operate as a soup. I think it needs to be on a dessert platter. But, I understand the popularity.
Vichyssoise is the classic cold soup. I just find it really boring.
Very boring.
Yeah, but we grow asparagus in our garden, and I use the stalks a lot to make chilled asparagus soup, and it's great.
Well, and I think this time of year we have so much great produce that we want to show off, and sometimes when you cook a vegetable, it tastes much different. You don't get the clean, you know, clear taste of what that is, and I think chilled soup is a way you can really highlight just the bounty of vegetables that we have right now in this season.
You've still got a little time to weigh in if you want to at 816-235-2888 with a chilled dish on a Kansas City menu. We have a tweet from one of our listeners telling us that the cucumber salad at ABC Cafe in Overland Park is good.
It is good. It's very good.
And
there's a vinegary note that's nice. It's always nice with a cucumber. But what I like the most about that salad, it is a really delicious palate cleanser for some of the spicier dishes they have.
Well, and a lot of it is fried. In fact, I just had dinner last night at ABC Cafe, so I can speak to this because I did have the cucumber salad. Charles is right. There's so many things that are fried or really rich or have like an exo, you know, salty, spicy, funky kind of sauce to it. And this is just a great way to like clear your palate. It's got a little soy, though, in it, in the dressing, I think, so.
Speaking of palate cleansers, Mary, I like that you included a coleslaw in your selections. Coleslaw is such a refreshing, picnic-y, barbecue-y favorite, and this time of year, that's awesome.
It is, and when you think summer, you do think coleslaw, and here in Kansas City with all the barbecue, you have to give a shout-out to Jack Stack. Everybody thinks it's the best coleslaw in the city, and I would have to agree.
Why is that?
You know, it's just the right amount of vinegar to mayonnaise base and balance, and it's cut up really small, so it's not like you have trouble getting it on your fork. And I just love it. Very crunchy.
There is something about coleslaw. I mean, it just takes you right back to the picnic table. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know if it's still a trend, but for a while, it was hard to find a coleslaw in a restaurant here in Kansas City that didn't have apples in it. Mm-hmm. And the first time I tasted it, I really, really liked it. And then when everyone was putting Granny Smith apples in their coleslaw, I developed a intolerance to it.
Well, that kind of lends, you know, kind of leans into a Waldorf salad to me. Yeah. You know, it starting
if only it had marshmallows. Yeah, I would have liked it more.
Yeah.
So the coleslaw at Jack Stack really stands out for you?
I think so, yeah. And I don't think I'm the only one. If you took a survey in the city, I think it would come out on top.
I'm wondering about spring rolls, because on the appetizer side of the menu, it used to be that you would see so many more hot things. And I think of spring rolls as one of these more popular. It's not just that it's not hot. They come out cold.
Well, I think they're supposed to be cold,
right?
Because they're made with, you know, the rice paper. I'm a big fan of the Vietnamese crab spring rolls at the Bristol. They have a great combination of crunchy, creamy, and aromatics in it, and they're really, really tasty. I love the fact that they've got avocado in them, that creamy.
That's
nice.
Unusual.
Yeah,
for
it is.
Spring roll.
It's hard to find good spring rolls. Not that they're not out there, but they're very labor intensive.
Yes.
And so you don't often see them on a menu. So when you do, you should get them or make them at home. They're easy to make at home.
Yeah, they are easy to make.
Well, if you wanted to make them at home, which I'm, you know, I'm too lazy. I will tell you my favorite spring rolls in town. They're not on my list. I need to add them. But the spring rolls they sell one day a week, I think, at the Le Mans Bakery.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
They're wonderful.
What's so great about them?
Well, they're extremely fresh tasting because I think someone's going to have to correct me on this, but I think they only have them on Tuesdays.
I think that's right. There's like one day a week.
And they taste like they were just made, and in a lot of cases they were.
Mm-hmm. Mary, there's a beef tartare you would have us order.
Yes, and I have to say I'm not a huge beef tartare fan, but the rendition that Michael Corvino does at his new Corvino Supper Club and Tasting Room is probably the best one I've ever had. And I've heard other people kind of exclaim when they eat it as well. It's got smoked béarnaise and a crisp pumpernickel cracker, and it just, all the flavors work together. It's a beautiful dish.
Isn't the real success story for steak tartare is less about the steak, although it should be fresh and good, but about at the accoutrements that it comes with?
Yes, but I would never order it unless I was really comfortable that this was going to be a good quality
and very, very
raw
fresh, yeah.
Beef. Yeah.
So shall we move on to dessert?
Sure.
Tell me about your favorite cold desserts. I feel like there are many categories of cold dessert that could be their own show and are their own show sometimes. Ice cream, for example. Are there things outside of those big categories that you want to draw our attention to?
I'm an ice cream girl, so I'm not sure I can help much with this.
I have something on my list, actually, and it's from Manila Bay, Iha Iha, I believe it's pronounced.
Beautifully pronounced.
It's the Filipino restaurant that's out where the old Bannister Mall is. It's close to there. But they have this beautiful Filipino dessert called Halo Halo, and it's shaved ice, and it's got a bunch of really interesting, texturally different things in it, like boiled sweet beans and coconut and tapioca pearls and agar jelly and jackfruit and palm nuts. And it's got like a sweetened condensed milk that's poured over the top that gives it its flavor. And it's always served in like a very tall, elegant kind of dessert glass with a long spoon so you can get all that good stuff at the bottom. But it's like eating a really creamy shaved ice that has these interesting kind of jellied textures in there. Fabulously delicious, really interesting and enjoyable. I loved it.
It sounds kind of healthy.
Well, the sweetened condensed milk,
oh,
I would say.
Yeah, okay.
No. A lot of sugar there, but yummy and very refreshing, obviously, after a nice, rich Filipino meal. So
nobody has mentioned a cheese plate, which kind of surprises me because that's one of these nice, cool things that can be an appetizer or a dessert.
That's a good point.
That's true.
Yeah. That's true.
Thank you. She's
gonna come up there.
Mm-hmm. Blue Stem Lounge has a really nice one, as does the new Corvino Supper Club and Westport Cafe.
Mm-hmm. There are some good cheese plates in the city for sure.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, the food critics are going to update us on everything we need to know about the Kansas City restaurant scene right now. And we might get a few more of these chilled dishes in there while we're at it. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. This is one of our Friday food shows, and today we're taking some time to catch up on what's happening in the local restaurant scene. New places that have opened up, big changes in staffing and menus, and other odds and ends. Okay, so let's start with big changes in who's working where, because there have been lots of those recently.
Absolutely. I think there was kind of two big announcements, and one was that David Ford, who used to be at Port Fonda, is now going to be taking over the executive chef position at Cafe Sebastian at the Kemper, which was Jennifer Maloney's, obviously, spot for so many years.
And you say obviously, but there may be some listeners who are not familiar with her the way the people in this room are. Could you share some information about that?
Absolutely. I think on this segment, we've actually talked about Jennifer before, but she was the executive chef there for, over 20 years, I think.
Since its opening.
And unfortunately passed away at the end of last year. And so that position for a while was left open, and I think the staff did a marvelous job just kind of picking up and carrying on in her absence. But they did a nationwide search looking for an executive chef, and so I'm so pleased that they decided to choose someone local. And David Ford is a great talent, and he's been working with Patrick Ryan at Port Fonda for many years now, so it'll be wonderful to see how he picks up the reins and moves Cafe Sebastian forward.
Who else do you want to tell us about, Mary?
Well, I think the other big news is the American, which closed at the end of the year, is now an event space, so for private parties. And
the American, this is such a known place. It's sort of locally famous, but for what?
It was iconic. It's at Crown Center, and it was probably the first of its kind of a really elegant dining room in Kansas City. And it had a great tradition of producing James Beard Award-winning chefs. And Debbie Gold was one of those chefs, and she had two stints there when it was open as a restaurant. And they've just hired her to come back and be in charge of the kitchen there for all their private events. It's not opening as a regular restaurant again. So she'll, if you have a wedding there, she'll be the chef. And I'm assuming, because they talked about doing pups, that when they bring chefs in from other parts of the country, that she will be in the kitchen helping that person.
Okay, first of all, what is meant by pop-ups? That's a buzzword in the restaurant world and beyond.
And Jenny is the one who is the queen of pop-ups, so she really should be speaking to this. But it's like a one or two night adventure, and you bring in a chef and you cook a dinner for people who just want to sign up and have a wonderful experience.
It's a special occasion or a special engagement, sort of like a concert.
Right. Exactly.
And what's wonderful about Debbie is that she has a reach that's, worldwide, nationwide. She knows chefs from across the country. So her pull will be very interesting in terms of who she's going to be able to get to come in.
And in this sense, it would just be a chef coming in for a one or two night dinner series and people can sign up and come.
Anyone else we need to talk about in terms of all of the big staffing changes at local restaurants?
I do think it's worth mentioning that the Rieger now has a pastry chef for the first time in the history of the restaurant. And this young lady's name is Amy Beeman, and she has joined them. She just moved back to Kansas City from Boston and has been working with a very famous Middle Eastern pastry chef in Boston. So she has a real interesting spice palette that she's going to be bringing to the really hearty, lovely food that Howard does at the Rieger. So I'm excited to see what a real pastry chef in the kitchen is going to do for it. So it should be interesting.
Can I ask about Cody Hogan at Lydia's, moving from chef de cuisine to general manager? Does that mean he will be out of the kitchen?
That's my understanding. He's going to be trading in his chef coat for a dinner jacket.
Interesting.
Yeah, and he's going to be managing that restaurant.
So briefly tell us that story. We're going to be talking to Cody next week on this show, so we'll be getting more of it. But why is that a piece of news that intrigues people who know this name?
Well, you know, Cody has been with Lydia's since it opened back in the late 90s. And so he's always had the chef de cuisine role. And he had a more of an extended role in that he traveled with Lydia and helped prep her for TV shows, kind of behind the scenes, doing a lot of prep work so that she looked like a rock star, obviously, on her television show.
Didn't he start out as a pastry chef?
Yes, he did start out as a pastry chef, in fact, at the restaurant, and then eventually went to chef de cuisine and then was kind of Lydia's traveling right-hand chef. So this is kind of interesting after all these years in the kitchen. And obviously, Dan Sweeney's still the executive chef of Lydia's. That hasn't changed. And he and Dan really have held it down all these years. But I can't think of a better person to bring the back of the house and the front of the house together in such a meaningful way as Cody.
Well, that's exciting. And, mm-hmm. and we will be hearing more from him about his personal story next week. Let's talk about new places with a lot of buzz. Who wants to kick us off here?
Well, I think the big one is Corvino Supper Club and Tasty Room. It was on the Eater National Most Anticipated Restaurants of 2017. And that's pretty cool for Kansas City to have a restaurant on that national list.
Have you been yet?
I have been.
Tell us about it.
Well, Michael Corvino is the chef. He was at the American before it closed. But before that, he was in Dallas, and he's got quite a resume. And it's really two restaurants in one. He's got a big supper club with a beautiful long bar. I think they call it their semi-truck because it's really a long bar. And then they have a music component. And they're quick to point out that this is not a place to just have a sit at a table and have a drink and listen. It's not a club. It's a place to eat where you can listen to music.
But what is meant by supper club?
Well, I think they want to kind of bring back that old feeling where you can have nice entertainment while you eat. And during dinner till like 9:30 or so, the music is pretty tame. They have a harp and, you know, or a piano player, and it doesn't interfere with your enjoyment of the meal. And then after 10 or so, they introduce a late night menu with his soon to be famous cheeseburger. And
I think it's already
famous.
If you ask Instagram, it's already famous.
Yeah, it is.
What is famous about this cheeseburger?
It's just he does it really well. It's on a homemade bun. It's his.
It's ginormous.
Yeah, it's his it's his homage to the Town Topic burger.
So this is a popular late night item at the supper club.
It is
at the Corvino Supper Club.
On the weekends, they bring in more trios and bigger combos, and I think it gets to be quite raucous. But going back to the food, they have a lot of small plates, a couple of large format dishes, but it's all intended to share. And then he's got a small tasting room that just opened this week with about 12 seats and two counter seats, I believe.
Another big trend that I notice when traveling and sort of looking up what restaurants are in different cities, is that going, do you anticipate the tasting room concept becoming popular in Kansas City?
Well, you know, he did that at the American, and I think he wanted to kind of take that to another level. Blue Stem does it
it works.
Well, you pay one price, and you can choose to do wine pairings or just order your wine by the bottle or glass or whatever. And the chef treats you to whatever he feels like cooking. And you could have 12 courses. And, you know, some of them might be a bite on a tiny little spoon. It just depends on how playful the chef wants to be.
So talk to me about, Jenny, you've got a pretty long list of places that are opening that you're excited about. Can you pick out just a couple that you really want to highlight? How about Attitude?
Attitude is actually already open. These are all open.
Right. New?
Yes. Yes. Relatively new.
Where is Attitude?
Attitude is over off of 31st Street.
Okay. I've wrote about it long before it opened.
Right.
It's open now?
It is open now.
Is it open for breakfast?
Oh, breakfast and lunch only.
Okay.
No dinner. And so basically it's one of those places that does kind of traditional breakfasts, larger, like platters, like eggs, bacon, you know, biscuits and gravy type stuff, and then more Italian things in the afternoon. And right now the menu does switch over. So at 11 o'clock, I believe it is, the menu switches to lunch. And so you can't get, it's not like you can get breakfast and lunch all day during the day, but they're open till 2, I believe. But the one thing that I think is really most notable about Attitude is their pastry. So they have a Mile High coconut cream pie that everyone must go and get a slice when they have it. They also do these things called gobs, which is a Polish term for basically a whoopie pie, is how we might know that. So it's kind of like a cakey cookie that's got a cream filling and different flavors. So chocolate peanut butter, chocolate cherry, kind of a chocolate vanilla. I mean, there's different flavors that you can get. And they also do some really good cookies. I have to say, I picked up a couple of snickerdoodle cookies for my son. That's his favorite. And he called me. They were so good. My 15-year-old son called me and said, wherever you got those, that's my favorite.
Jenny, I remember that when they were just starting to build out that space, mm-hmm. which is a great historical space, it wasn't very big. I couldn't in my mind's eye mm-hmm. imagine how many people could sit there in that restaurant.
I think they're going to eventually have to probably address that. I think right now there's probably room for 12 to 15 people. I mean, it's relatively small right now, but they have plenty of space, and I think eventually they'll figure out kind of where their happy spot is. But yeah, worth going.
Tell me about Tiki Cat.
Tiki Cat. Tiki Cat is my new obsession. So tiki bars have been kind of on an upswing trend for many years on the coasts. And there's always been rumors in Kansas City that one bartender or another was thinking about opening up a tiki bar. What I love about this story is it's the president and CEO of Popcat, basically, that has a passion himself personally for tiki. And when he bought this space to put Hopcat in Westport, it specifically had this basement space that they weren't sure what to do with, and he immediately thought, this is where I want to test my own tiki bar. So he brought in Bob Bamboo and all of these really famous tiki artisans to recreate a fantastically authentic tiki experience in the basement of Hopcat, which is really a beer, kind of a beer-focused restaurant, if you will. And it's really good and really fun, and he got all the right talent to kind of come in and make the place look correct, make the drinks delicious. So all the tropical tiki drinks that you can imagine.
Are they the traditional tropical drinks?
Pina coladas and such?
Yes.
Daiquiris?
Absolutely. And there's you go down to the basement, there's basically a green light and a red light. When the green light's on, they have room for more. When the red light's on, it means they're full or you have to be on a wait. It's really important to make reservations if you really want to go.
And you is it because it's small or it's that popular?
I think because, it is literally that small. But it's like lounge furniture and couches and really, really fun, interesting atmosphere. So everybody has to go and check out Tiki Cat.
But I think we should stress that I even ask you this. There is no tiki cuisine
right. Like
the old Trader Vic's used to have.
Well, I will tell you that when I went down to Tiki Cat, I had a couple of tiki drinks, enjoyed myself very much, and then went right upstairs and went straight to the roof and ordered their crack fries.
Yeah, I've heard those are good.
Which are really hard to get away from. So, yeah, so you can obviously go right upstairs and eat if you're interested in that.
Mary, tell us about Boru Ramen.
So Boru Ramen is in the old Summit Bar and Grill space at 75th and Warnell. And Summit Grill moved to the old 75th Brewery just to the west in the same block. And Boru Ramen is not just a ramen shop. We have several ramen shops now, but this has a lot of, it's a full-service restaurant with steamed buns, fried rice, beef tataki, a fabulous Brussels sprouts dish, and of course ramen.
What does it add to the ramen scene in Kansas City, which is small, but just sort of suddenly existent kind
of. Well, I think of ramen restaurants as get in and get out. And this has a big bar scene and it's more of a, you can sit for a long time and they're not going to kick you out. But it is owned by the same people, by the way, as Summit Bar and Grill.
Is ramen, which, you know, it does seem to be really a popular trend right now, but is it going to be the disco of the culinary scene in Kansas City where it's hot for a minute and then over?
That's an interesting question.
We love ourselves some David Chang, and I kind of, yeah. His influence is really what's brought it in. So I think we'll see ramen for a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to say I am personally thrilled that Andres is remodeling their tea room.
It's about time.
Oh my gosh, that tea room, it was starting to look as old as I do.
Oh. So what's any hint about how it's going to look?
It's going to look modern, like the front of their store, but they're keeping the lovely Swiss chalet that was...
That was the thing that I think should have gone.
Oh, I think that's the charm.
Well, our time is up, so we will never get to the bottom of whether the chalet is its charm or its downfall. But Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mary Block, whose blog you can follow at Around the Block, thank you.
Happy to be here.
And Charles Ferruza, this has been fun.
Thank you very much.
Charles writes reviews for The Independent and the Shawnee Mission Post. We'll have our list of the best chilled and iced foods in town available for you in time for the weekend at kcur.org/centralstandard. If you want to stay in touch with us, you can find us on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. This show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. Linda Scher runs the board for us, and our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. Our intern is moving on. Thanks so much to Caitlin Troutman for everything she's contributed, and that's a wrap. I'm Gina Kaufman.